first off, I think Coach Pitt handles all of that really well. And he's the number one advocate for our players. I mean, there's no one in our building that wants more for our guys than him.
I'd like to welcome everybody to the Coaches in the Mouth pod. This is Coach Jeff Williams along with Coach Bray Cook in the mouth, Brent Bender. Got a special guest, offensive line coach for the University of Arkansas, Coach Eric Mateos. Coach, last time we visited with you, you were walking in your room, your meeting room for the first time, and you were all over the place, and that's been a couple of months. Talk to us. What have you been doing the last couple of months besides spring ball and you know, out recruiting and getting that offensive line ready to go for this coming fall?
Well, besides that, I haven't been doing anything. I mean, that's what I've been doing. No, it's been it was a good spring. Good when I first got there, it was hit the transfer portal, evaluate players, get to the right spots, find the right people in a short amount of time. Then that kind of got a little bit of a lull during Christmas and, got a house and got all that situated. And we moved in and a week later we had a baby. So, and then we had spring ball right after that. So this is my first relaxing time. I mean, this is the best chair I've sat in months. So,
well, Coach, let's do this a little bit. Let's talk about where you've been and how you've done it and everything. To get the people out here familiar with you, you know, they've read about you and, you know, your different ventures you've had in the coaching profession. Talk to us a little bit about where you've been. Obviously, you got a great connection with Coach Pittman, but where you've been and where you've grown as a coach where you are at now.
Well, you know, it was really – when I got done here as a GA, so back then the support staffs were like two GAs and one quality control on each side of the ball. So it wasn't like the army that it is now. Yeah. You know, every school in the country has got, you know, 50 people in the building. So we got done and basically Coach Bielema was like, hey, I mean, I would love to keep you. We don't have a job for you here because you can only GA for 3 years. So I made the decision, said, you know what, I'm gonna go GA somewhere else and meet new people and learn new things. And so I went to LSU for a year and had a good time with that. And a year after that, I got my first full-time gig at Texas State as the line coach for 2 years in San Marcos, and then went to BYU for two, and went to Baylor for the last three. So it's been a long time, but it also feels like just driving up here, I'm like, man, it feels like just I was just here a decade ago, you know, because I haven't been down this way very much. But, you know, it just feels like home. But it's been a while. So I've been around trying to do it myself, you know, and trying to get better. I mean, that's the biggest thing. When you're a GA, you feel like you know everything. You're like, I can do it better than this guy, you know. And then you realize as soon as you become the line coach how much you suck, you know. So that's been my thing, is just I'm trying to get better and never feel like I know everything and still got a long ways to go.
Well, let's talk about this. You know, you go through off season. You got some, you know, I know the Branham kid from Southside came in early and you know, had some guys. Talk to us going the preparation with Coach Petrino, who you've not worked with before, new offensive coordinator. Talk to us about the preparation going into spring ball and, you know, different terminology for everybody, you, the players, and all that part. And then going through spring ball, what'd you see?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of a crazy process because you start big. I mean, Coach, we basically put every play that Coach Petrino has run on the board, you know, and so you're looking at 500 plays or something up on the board, routes, protections, runs, and everything like that. And you're looking at those things. And then basically it's, hey, we got to teach the staff, you know, he's got to teach it to us. And part of that too is matching it up. I felt like sometimes I was kind of the in between, because like I know how Coach Pittman likes to call things. And then, you know, I'm learning Coach Petrino's terminology. I'm like, okay, how can I form this to where everybody feels comfortable with where the offense is at least in my world, which is protections and runs. And and it was a lot of fun. And a lot of the stuff, it was stuff I was familiar with, things we've ran here in the past, things I've run other places. And then some of it was totally new, you know, protections that I have never run before. I said, well, I better get in on, you know, study them. I mean, you can't teach something if you don't know it.
Right.
So, that was a big sense of urgency for me on some of those things. Cause it's like, well, we're going out here and running this today. So I better know it. So then the boys can know it. Yeah. So it was a really fun process and he's been great, great to work with.
Well, going through those practices or, you know, it's so big and you got to evaluate and, you know, always, you know, being an old offensive line coach and these guys are old offensive line experienced guys too. You know, you're putting five guys together and you're really looking for eight, you know, mm-hmm. we've talked about before with injuries. Going into spring, what were you looking for? You know, there was emphasis on protection. There was emphasis on the run game. I mean, I know you're trying to balance it out, but mm-hmm. there's always an emphasis. What were the emphases going into? Just learning the scheme or pass protection, run blocking?
I would say that, you know, if you put like a percentage on what we worked on and what we've taught the players, we've probably taught 90% of the run techniques and we've probably only taught 50% of the protection techniques.
Yeah.
So really just dove in like, hey, the guys are going to learn these run game techniques, because the thing with run game techniques is there's carryover to scheme, you know, hey, yeah. this is the same technique in this other play that we ran. And here's the deal. You want to win in this league, you got to be able to run the football.
Yeah.
And if you can't run the football in this conference, you're going to have a long year. And so that's where it started. And so I would say most of the emphasis on just the techniques and the fundamentals was on the run game, especially even, I mean, I don't think we did, I didn't do a pass protection drill until spring ball started, like the whole February kind of OTA time, yeah. it was all run game stuff. And so that was the big emphasis. But then as we got into spring ball, it's what's the foundation for protections and technique in that. And then as we go through summer, we'll be able to build on a pretty good foundation, I feel like.
Well, cool deal. Mouth?
When you got here, Coach Mateos, what was the biggest challenge you found coming to Arkansas from Baylor?
I mean, there hasn't been a lot of – I mean, I would say, like, the recruiting landscape in general in the SEC is much more rigorous than the Big 12. I mean, when you're at a place like Baylor, you already know that there's a sliver of players at the top of the crop that you ain't got a chance at. And so you're not even really starting those relationships because you're like, well, this guy's never going to come play in the Big 12 anyway, so why even bother? And then you get in the SEC and it's like, the door's open to you. You're in the best conference in the country and guys want to play on that stage. And so the biggest challenge for me was I was behind. I got the job and I'm on the 2025 recruits on the juniors. I'm behind. I was behind and I'm playing catch up and I'm doing transfers and I'm doing high school kids. And so just catching up on recruiting is the hardest thing. Cause I mean, relationships, you can't just call somebody and they trust you. You know, I mean, half the time you get the telemarketer, you just, even if they're calling for something serious, you don't believe anything they're saying. Right. And so that's kind of how recruiting is. Take some time for them to buy into you. So I would say just catching up in recruiting was the biggest challenge transitioning here.
You know, you mentioned earlier talking about those techniques and schemes and things that you focused on, talking about the run game. What is, I guess, what's the balance of those schemes and techniques and things, but also building relationships with your offensive linemen? You know, mm-hmm. you take over a room. What do you do to facilitate that aspect of coaching?
I mean, that's been the number one goal since we got here was kind of, I mean, for lack of a better term, repairing the room, you know, because it was, the spirit was broken. The confidence was down. I mean, there was a lot of guys in there that weren't sure if like, hey, we really can do this, you know? And so that's been the number one thing is just building the room back up confidence wise and just getting the guys together. Cause some of the feedback was, hey, we would like to be tighter as a unit. or maybe they didn't feel that way the last season. And so that's been a huge emphasis, is getting the guys together, opening up. We right away tried to have meals together. I met with everybody right when I got here, but then, you know, trying to get the guys together. And then also, I think just the personality, I think being real, you know, being normal, being a normal coach. And if you come in and you're, hey, I'm the new boss in town, you know, the guys are going to be like, get out of here, bro. Like, we don't even know you. So, I took it really personal to try and earn everybody's trust on an individual level. Cause if you don't do that, then you're never going to get the group, because there's always going to be some one or two or three guys in the room. They're like, man, I don't buy into this guy. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't want to coach me. And so that's been the biggest thing, is can you connect with everybody on an individual level? And once you can do that, then you can coach the group. And then how do you bring the group together where, you know, you got guys from different backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, you know, their family life. You got guys with great two-parent homes. You got guys with one-parent homes. You got guys that, you know, had trouble keeping the lights on. You got guys that drove a Mercedes in high school. And so how do you get all these different people to be a unit and feel like their family? And so, like, we started from the very beginning, we started breaking it down. The tighter we are, the better we are. And so that's how we break it down every day at the end of anything we do. And so that's just, some of that could be considered like, hey, you're just forced family fun. You know, I don't know if you guys ever been a part of that where you're like, hey, we're having dinner tonight as a family. I mean, some of that is real. I mean, you got to put yourselves in position to create those relationships. And so that's been more important than any scheme or technique that we could teach. That's the number one thing, because, you know, that is what's going to keep your room together in a hard, rigorous season.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, once you have that and you do move on to those schemes and those techniques and things, you mentioned you spent so much time on the run game during the OTA period. Mm-hmm. What were some of those things that you installed? Like, what's your day one, guys, this is what we got to be good at?
I think it's the speed of play. You know, the speed of play. What I want our edge to be, and to me, like, when you talk about, like, your edge, it's like, what makes you different than other people, right? And different players have different edges. You know, like Bray, for example, as a player, was maybe not the fastest player we had, but Bray was maybe probably one of the strongest players we had. So every player individually has their edge, like what makes them different than other guys, what gives them a leg up on the competition. I want our O-line edge as a group to be how fast we play. And it's a speed of play. And the analogy I kind of used was like, who does everybody hate playing mid-year in college football?
Alabama, probably.
No, I'm talking like style of play.
Oh, smash mouth.
Triple option, right?
Yeah, you know,
it's Air Force, Army. It's those teams, like, you see them on the schedule week six, and you're like, oh, great. Yeah. How are we going to get ready for this in a week? My goal is when defensive coaches put on our film on Sunday, how are we going to get ready for this speed of play in a week? This O-line plays faster than every other O-line in the SEC. Mm-hmm. How can we get our players? And they're not, you know, the goal is like, hey, we can't get our scout team to play as fast as these guys play at Arkansas. And so that's like the foundation to me. And it doesn't matter if you're running wide zone, toss cracks, if you're running inside zone, it's still a speed of play, how you come off the ball, the aggressive mentality. I think that needs to be our edge. And then how we finish, you know, the biggest emphasis, like, we tracked loafs big time this spring, is like finishing blocks, picking guys up off the ground. You know, one of the things I felt like we really needed to improve on from last season watching the film is there'd be guys getting tackled and nobody would pick the guy up. You know, and so in the media room this spring, if you didn't cover down on a pass, we made a two white line rule. Hey, the ball's thrown, you got to jog, you got to go two white lines, and then you can go back to the play. And then if you don't go and help somebody up off the ground, doesn't matter if it's a back, a receiver, anybody, then that's a loaf. And we're pointing those things out big time, because we need to have a gang mentality. We're running to the ball, we're finishing plays. And so, like, I think that is kind of the edge that I want to see our guys have different than other people.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you install that kind of edge with an offensive line, obviously it's going to spread to the rest of the team. One of the things I wanted to bring up today was we had that O-line roundtable a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Some of the coaches in Northwest Arkansas, and we were talking about things. I think we were talking about flipping the offensive line left and right side and flipping on the strength. And, you know, I said, and I told my team this, I said, you know, I don't think we're quite ready for that yet. And you said, you know, don't, are you sure? Like, why would you set that ceiling for your guys? Mm-hmm. And you know, I took that probably, it's great. I mean, I think to go out there and get a group of guys and say, hey, this is the ceiling, this is where we think we can be, and then why don't we go higher? Mm-hmm. And obviously that's going to do that with scheme and culture.
Well, I just think it's a standard. You know, I mean, if here's the difference between you're coaching at a school like Arkansas, every guy that walks through that door in that meeting room wants to go play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Every single guy. They all want to be great players. They all want to go play in the NFL. I've coached some places where some of the guys don't really have that dream, you know. And so I just think if you start – and I get the mindset of, hey, we got to do what our players can handle. But then how do you ever know what they can handle? You know, I mean, I believe in like, hey, let's push them, man. Let's make them learn a lot of football. Let's make the standard so high that they feel like they can never reach it. And then as a coach at some point, hey, all right, we'll start tapering off, you know, because we started our spring install, you know, pretty heavy. And you know, and there's days where the guys are like, oh, man, we got a lot of plays in. We got a lot of protections in. Well, you're dang right we do. This ain't going to change when you get to the NFL. I mean, what, you think you're going to get three run plays in the NFL? No, there's going to be 20 protections and 22 run schemes, and that's what it's going to be, and you got to learn it, or you ain't going to make it. So we just kind of put the standard so high where it's like, hey, they're pushing everybody to get up there. And, you know, what I really mean by that, what I said at that deal, and really the thought is, why would you put a ceiling on if you don't know what the ceiling is, you know? And because I've been places where you run two plays and you're really good at them, and that's great, you know. But, man, defenses are getting complex and they're getting good and they're stealing your signals and they know your stuff. So you got to be on your – you got to be on point. You got to be able to go to different things, you know.
Speaking of that, stealing signals, new deal this year in college football mm-hmm. with the radio and the helmet. Mm-hmm. Looks like we had a little trouble in the spring game with that. That's okay.
man, that's hilarious.
Coach Petrino looked like he's used one before, but he wasn't real happy about it.
Hey, we had some technical difficulties, and Coach was not pleased with the quality that we were experiencing. That was one of those put my mic up moments. You know, I'm just going to put my mic up and not be involved in this.
Yeah. Well, talk to me a little bit about that, you know, because, you know, back in the day, you got 25 guys signaling over there. And of course, the big deal with Michigan supposedly, mm-hmm. you know, well, I guess they did steal signals along with everybody else in the world. But is that a game changer? I mean, being able to do that, because you've been around and how all that works.
I think it is. I'm interested to see how the college coaches use it.
Yeah.
You know, because in the NFL, they don't want signals anyways, you know, but I'm interested to see how that speeds up the tempo teams. I'm interested to see how that, because nobody in the NFL is really going at that tempo, high velocity, high rep count pace. I'm interested to see how that comes into effect now with the helmet communication. But to me, the biggest game changer is, you know, people will be able to figure out this team I'm talking about. But in 2021, when I was at Baylor, there was a team that we played early in the season. And, you know, they had somebody on their staff that had just worked for us that previous spring ball. And, it was really interesting how nice their game plan was during that game. And we got an opportunity to play them again in the Big 12 championship game. And it was a different story. And we changed our signals and changed our communication tactics. And, you know, we won the Big 12 championship. And so I think just some of that BS that goes on, you know, I think it'll help eliminate a lot of that stuff. And, I'm excited to see some more teams huddle. I mean, I think the beauty in huddling, and I'm not saying always huddle. I think the best thing about football is changing tempos.
Yeah.
Right. Is, hey, can you go fast and go slow? But I think the cool thing about huddling is, you know, the way defensive coordinators are calling the game now, they're, everybody's waiting to see the formation. So defensive coordinators are calling the game. They're waiting. You can see it. You can watch a game and all the defensive players are looking at the sideline, just waiting, waiting, waiting. That defensive coordinator is waiting for the formation before he makes the call. Well, we have a kind of offense where we can huddle. So then you can't see, wait, what is it? Which, what is that? I can't tell. And then shift and motion and change it. And it's like, well, we're not going to wait to see the formation anymore. You know, we're just going to call a defense, which I think gives the offense the advantage again. So also, I'm interested to see if more teams go back to the huddle, maybe a little bit more huddling. And I know we're going to do both, but I'm interested to see how that changes it.
Now, and you're saying, I know everybody's no huddle and all that, but you're seeing the huddle actually come back. And I think it's a lot – the defensive coaches have gotten so good, and the players also, you know, recognizing formations, and now all of a sudden, boom, they got to get out there, you know, 10 seconds, declare, get lined up, and all of a sudden the deal, you know, the strength moves, and, mm-hmm. and it's going to be very, very interesting. Let's talk about technique just a little bit. When you got here, you know, Coach Trino, you talked about maybe, and you know, Coach Pittman also, you know, non-negotiables. What – is there a technique or anything you probably brought to the table? Everybody's kind of does the same thing, but there's a little nugget here or there, and you don't have to give it away if you don't want to. But talk to us about going in and getting your guys fundamentally sound. You know, you talked mm-hmm. about playing fast. You know, if you know what, there's nothing scarier than a confident old line, and there's nothing worse than one with no confidence, mm-hmm. and you've been around it. But getting those guys technique-wise in to play fast, what kind of techniques or did you bring in this year?
Yeah, I would say I don't think that I have anything like earth shattering yeah. or different. I think one of the things that I do differently than maybe some others, and then maybe differently than what they did here in the past is, you know, in our stretch game, our wide zone game, you know, they, defensive holdings are rule, but they don't call it. You know, I mean, how many defensive holdings you see called on a nose guard? They don't call them. And so my big emphasis in that scheme is playing long. And so whereas some of our, you know, gap scheme, inside zone combinations are more vertical, second step timing, shoulder than hand, physical blocks, our wide zone blocks, especially when, you know, you're the covered man on a double team, are really focused on playing with length. Mm-hmm. How can I keep that guy from grabbing me? Because once you become a good wide zone team, every D-line coach said, don't let that guy get on the linebacker. Well, it's on you to make sure he can't grab you either, you know? And so I think that's probably something different that was unique to the players that they hadn't done before. And so I brought that, but a lot of the stuff we're doing on the inside zone and gap scheme, the things that we did, you know, 12 years ago, 11 years ago when Pittman was O-line coach. And so, I mean, he's coaching, like, those are the things he's coaching during individual.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, you know, I would say I'm probably maybe a little bit more versed in wide zone because I've been doing it for like the last, you know, half a decade pretty exclusively. And Coach Pittman's probably one of the best inside zone gap scheme coaches that there's ever been. And so when I'm designing an individual, hey, I'm giving him, you know, and I'm picking, hey, what drills coach is going to do and I'm going to do. Like, I'm giving him the inside zone drills. Like, I'm giving them to him because there's nobody better that's going to coach those. I'm not going to coach him as good as he is. So I'm going to give them to him. So he's going to be working those combinations. But a lot of that stuff is the same things that we've been doing. I think the biggest philosophical change difference between me and Coach Pitt is I'm a little bit more probably a little bit more of a menu and pass protection as far as like different types of sets. Coach Pitt is a very like fundamental, like, hey, get great on one or two sets. And I think that's a great approach. I'm a little bit more, I look at a view as like a baseball pitcher, right? And there's some pitchers, they throw, you know, Mariano Rivera, whatever his cutter or something, you know, he'd come in and everybody knew that pitch was coming and they couldn't hit it. That's great. Well, I view like pass sets a lot like pitching, where you can have a fastball or whatever your best pitch is, and you're going to throw that most of the time in critical situations. Like, you're going to throw your best pitch, but throughout the course of a game, if you keep throwing the same pitch over and over again in pass protection, eventually you're going to be a dinger going over your head. And so I'm maybe a little bit more, I have probably a little bit bigger index of types of sets that our guys use in pass protection. And we've kind of only scratched the surface on some of them. A lot of those techniques are going to come more, even more in the summer. So that's kind of where, that's really the only differences between me and Coach Pitt, but a lot of the stuff is the same stuff we were doing 10 years ago.
Wow.
You know, speaking of 10 years ago, he had some great, great players on that offensive line.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Iron Hogs.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys know he won the Iron Hog Award?
Yeah.
Have you seen the trophy?
Well, Bray has all kinds of trophies. Well, and I'm not saying necessarily football trophies. I mean, all around the South, we got all kinds of things.
He's got trophies so all over. All over. Yeah, so,
it's a gold painted 45-pound plate.
Yeah,
was the strength award. Yeah, Coach Herb.
Herbie with the Chargers now.
Oh, yeah, with the Chargers.
Did you see his press conference?
I saw like a still
the
of
clip.
It.
The clip.
His face. Just
you guys got to watch Herb's press conference with the Chargers. If you haven't seen it, look it up. My gosh. It was amazing.
Powerful.
It was amazing. It was so on brand for Herb. Uh-huh. I was like, these pro fans don't know what they're getting into with Herb. But yeah, Herb made the trophy a gold-plated 45-pound plate for Bray.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was impressed with it. It was awesome. It was awesome.
We do the same thing at P. Ridge. So we our strength awards the Iron Hawk. And we
the Iron Hawk.
Give him that gold plate, baby.
Man, it's funny how that stuff carries on. Yeah, you guys are – I love that group, you know. That group that we had, you know, when we were here before – was so close, was so close. I mean, that's kind of what I'm trying to recapture now is that closeness that you guys had. And I've had the best O-lines I've been around I've been blessed to have been with four different O-lines at four different schools that were Joe Moore Award finalists or semifinalists. Like we were finalists here at Arkansas. I think we were finalists. Mm-hmm. And then the next year I was at LSU, we were finalists. At BYU and Baylor, we were semifinals, which was top 10 for the award. It's the common denominator is how close the boys are, you know, and that makes a difference. I mean, talent, and that group wasn't as talented as anybody else or not more talented than anybody else in the conference, but they were just really close and really tough. Yep. And we're trying to kind of emulate that now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it earlier, and I guess a big part of that is just breaking bread together and just being around each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, how do you create that? And
it's just other time. Ways you've, yeah. It's time. There's no quick fix. Yeah. I mean, I met my wife on Bumble, but besides that, I haven't had any quick relationships formed, you know? And so, no, it was just, I think it's just consistent effort, you know, and putting yourself out there, making yourself vulnerable with other people. I mean, we'll do things like, you know, we'll talk about different people's personal things, and we'll have even more things in the summer and in training camp that I don't really want to spill the beans on, but that'll be designed to bring the boys together. And there's got to be a connection there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, for lack of a better term, it's an intimate connection, because what you're doing is thankless, hard work, man. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it with another dude, and you're sitting there like, hey, man, I can really trust this guy. And it just means so much more to you to get your job done, because you don't want to let that guy down.
Yeah.
And so I think it's being authentic, being vulnerable, putting the guys in position to be vulnerable. I think that's part of the coach's job is, you can't just tell them like, hey, I need you guys to be close. You got to put them in positions to make them close. And that could be a meal. That could be, you know, hey, why don't you three guys come hang out in my office today at 3:00 and we'll just watch NFL film of this scheme for whatever, 10 minutes. And so it's just built over time. Because, I mean, here's the deal. Trust is built in drops. I mean, that's the truth of it. And it's lost in buckets. And so it just takes time and time and time. And I think if everybody's authentic and being real, I think it'll match up. And we're already, I mean, I think the guys have said it publicly too. I mean, I think the room already is a lot closer than maybe it was before.
Well, good deal. Who are some of the
young guys, you know, newcomers coming in, maybe not in the rotation, but, you know, really made big strides in the offseason and in spring
ball. Yeah, the guys that don't get the headlines,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Man, that's cool. That I'm glad you asked me that because those guys don't get talked about, you know. You know, somebody that comes to mind right away is Aaron Smith, who's a walk-on from Conway, who has done nothing but get better and improve. And, I mean, he reminds me a lot of other young players I've seen. I think he's going to develop into a great player. Somebody that really surprised me is Brooks Edmondson, who's also a walk-on. I can't remember where Brooks is from. I think he might be from where's Buck James at now? No, he's at Conway.
Conway. It might have been Bryant.
Yeah. Bryant. Yeah, Brooks is from Bryant. So Brooks was really impressive. And, you know, he's trying to be a doctor. So he's in all these science classes. So he missed half of our OTA workouts. And so I didn't, like, really get to see what he could do until, like, a week before training camp or spring camp started. I'm like, whoa, this guy's actually pretty good. And so he did a nice job. You see E. Harris is developing really well. He's kind of – nobody really is talking about him, but he's really had a great offseason and has put on good weight and has really improved. You know, Tykese Crawford has gotten a lot better. You know, I'm going to get in trouble now because I'm not going to say somebody, but I think I like our room because even the guys like Luke Brown's a red shirt this past year and had a lot of injuries. So like, he's still got a long ways to go developing, but like he got better. I mean, there's not a guy in the room that you said, man, this guy didn't get better during spring. No, everybody's got stuff to get fixed. I got stuff I got to get fixed, but I thought that, that was really cool. I think one of the guys that really surprised me maybe more than anybody was Amari Wiggins. And so Amari, I think, signed from junior college, got here late last summer maybe. From my understanding, he had an ankle injury that was kind of slowing him down. He's a freak. I mean, he is a freaky talented guy. I mean, he's about 6'2", sawed off. You know, he's 300, 305, but his feet are strong. He plays with great bend and center of gravity. He really surprised me this spring. He looked really good at center. He played some guard too. So that's a guy who probably nobody's talking about or thinking about. You know, right now everybody wants to talk to you about what transfer you're about to sign or what guy you're going to recruit. But, like, the guys in the room got a lot better during the spring.
Well, cool deal. I'm going to ask you this. I always ask every offensive line coach this. How many centers do you carry or get ready to go for a season? You know, obviously during the week or whatever, you get narrowed down two guys or whatever. Getting prepared for a season, knowing what a critical position that is with the calls and being able to sometimes block one-on-one and all that aspect of it. How many guys do you get ready for that? And do you have to take a lot of guys that hadn't done it, or is that something you look for in recruiting?
Yeah. So it's such a good question because it's so – people don't think about it. They just don't.
If you're an O-line coach, buddy, at night you think about it. I promise you.
You're an O-line coach, you think about it every day. Yeah. But there's nobody talking about, hey, how many centers is this team going to carry? No, I mean, like, so, for example, in spring, I think we had 16 available players. We had five guys snapping every single day. And so that's like the minimum is have five guys snapping. And when you start developing a travel roster – whether that's 10, 11, you know, that can come into play. Like that 11th guy, can he snap? You know, if you're going to bring an 11th guy on a road game in the SEC, you can only bring 70, I think, on an away game. Can that 11th guy play center? And so I've refused to ever go on a road game without three ready to go. Home game, obviously, you'd like to have five guys available, but because the other challenge of it really is sometimes your second center is not your second center.
Yeah.
Sometimes your second center is your right guard or your left guard or your right tackle, right? And so that becomes the hula hoops you're trying to play through during the fall. How many reps am I given? Hey, my starting guard is really my second center, but I need him to get these reps at guard in preparation for this game. But also, I got to get them some center reps. So it's like the mental gymnastics that you're playing with that during the week is such a pain. But you got to ask your questions. And like one of my mentors and great friends, Jeff Grimes, he's the offensive coordinator at Kansas now. So, I mean, we used to play this game at LSU on Fridays, and he'd be like, hey, it's time to play the game. Yeah. And I hated the game. And the game was, he'd say, okay, this guy goes down. Yeah. Who's going in? And I'd give him my opinion. He'd give his opinion. Okay, now this guy goes down. And the game is miserable. It's a miserable game. But you have to go through it in your head. So in the heat of the moment, you're ready to make the adjustment, you know?
Yeah, I had a defense coordinator one time. He was talking about the third string linebacker in high school. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what if this guy goes down? And I finally said, if we're probably playing that guy, we're going to lose. The way it is. You hate to say it, but it is what it is.
Well, so like 2020 at BYU, we got down my fourth center.
Wow.
During the season. Ooh. Like in the Boca Raton Bowl against UCF, we were down to our fourth center, a true freshman. And he did a great job. He did great to his credit. He had himself ready for that moment. And he went in and did a great job. But, yeah, we got to the fourth stringer during that 2020 season, which was – we were a good team. We went 11-1. But, we got to number four. And then, you have years like 2015, the year after Bray was gone. Like, I don't think we ever had a guy come out of that 2015 O-line. Like, those five guys never left the field. I think Kirkland's helmet popped off against Tennessee, and Johnny Gibson was on the field before we even knew that Kirkland's helmet was off. That's how a credit to Johnny. Shout out to Johnny, who's at Camden, Fairview. But no one missed a game or a snap during that season. And then, 2019 at BYU, I was telling one of my players the other day, I had 16 different lineups of five players in 2019. So I've been on both sides of it, so you never know how it's going to play out.
Mouth, I tell you, Coach Mateos, I just get so excited when I hear you talk because you remind me so much of my dad. I just want to come out of this chair and just go absolutely crazy. But you're just so much like him in how you nurture your players and want to where they respect you from the get-go. And they, in my dad's case, in Coach Pittman's case as offensive line coach, they did not want to disappoint you.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to play. My dad always said my goal was for my five offensive linemen to be the best five players on our offensive unit. And I must say he was more like Coach Pittman with pass protection. Let's just, stay square, keep your chin over your appendage, and move your feet. We're going to be good. He didn't have a whole recipe book of pass protection. Mm-hmm. But you just fire me up over here. I'm just
good. That's a great compliment.
I'm just feeling good about it, and I'm ready to. And I have seen one of your freshmen. I watched him all through high school, Kobe Branham from Southside.
Yeah.
And Coach Dameron coached with my dad at before UNLV, and he said, "What would your dad say about Kobe Branham?" I said, he'd say he's a fire hydrant, and the best thing you ever did with Kobe was you were never tempted to move him out to tackle. My dad would say he would fight you in a phone booth.
Yeah,
and I'm just excited to see how he progresses throughout.
He did so good this spring.
He's got talent just running up, pouring out of each pore of his body. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, no, he did a great job. The best quality he has is zero fear.
No.
He's got zero fear. Sometimes you get an early enrollee freshman and they're nervous. And like Kobe came in and he had days where he got his knocked off, but he never flinched, like never once. Was like, you could never sometimes, and he had a couple days where miss assignments stacked up, and he's sitting there wondering, like, oh man, I get in his rear a little bit, but he loves the Hogs, and that's the coolest thing about Kobe is he's passionate about playing O-line for Arkansas, and he's got a lot of technique that he's got to get fixed because right now he don't have nothing, but he is so willing and he wants to be great. And so a guy like that, it's just a matter of time. He reminds me a lot of Skip when Skip was a freshman, mm-hmm. because Skipper, he got no technique. He's 6'10", so he looks awkward doing everything. That's kind of like Kobe. It's different body types, but you know, at least they're willing to fight. You know, mm-hmm. they're not scared of it. They're not intimidated by the moment. They have passion for the game. And I think Kobe has that.
What is, I guess, your role and recruiting's role in the NIL with an offensive line? Now, I'm so locked into the culture and building a unit together. Is that hard to navigate? Is that kind of a new, I guess, piece of that puzzle?
It's really hard. It's really hard. It's probably the hardest thing right now, and not so much the NIL piece, because I mean, kids deserve to get some money. I mean, mm-hmm. That's the facts. I mean, they do. They put their body on the line for the team and for the university, and they work really hard, and they don't have time to get jobs. They deserve to get some money. The challenge that you're referring to really is, how do you keep the unit a unit?
Yeah.
When egos come in, when comparison, pocket watching, all that comes into play. How do you do it? I think it's about bringing the right guys in.
Yeah.
I had some unbelievable text messages from transfers in this first recruiting cycle. And you're just like, hey, I'm Coach Mateos. Would you like to get on a call sometime today? Coach, hey, I'm looking for this. Like, what? This is the opening statement, you know, like, no thanks. Right. So I think it's my job to make sure that I'm bringing the right people in that, you know, deserve to profit off their name, image, and likeness, but also guys that aren't so consumed with it. You know, our left tackle right now has already got guys trying to steal him from us already. And he just got here in January. And there's already guys trying to steal them. And you know, you hear rumors and agents, you know, now they got agents. So agents talk, and these agents don't even need to be NFLPA certified. Like, the thing with NFL agents is they all got to be certified through the Players Association. These dudes are just like, got an associate's degree and lived down the street from Johnny and said, hey, Johnny, I'll be your agent. And you're like, all right. You know, and like, it's, and some of them are doing it the right way. It's not a blanket statement, but, that's the challenge really with it, is how do you manage people kind of trying to come get your guys. And I guess my goal would be is the players love playing here at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. They love playing for me, and then they love playing with each other, that some of the cheating that's going on doesn't really faze them. Like with Fernando, like I called him. I was like, hey, man, I know people are coming after you, trying to get you to leave again. And he's like, Coach, you ain't got to worry about nothing. I'm riding with you, you know? And like, I knew he would say that, but as a coach, you just live in this constant state of paranoia now that you can't help, you know? Cause I mean, I heard a call. I had somebody tell me 2 days ago that there was a collective from a university calling kids at another school who are not in the portal and offering them money to go into the portal. Oh. The collective is recruiting. The collective is recruiting players. And it's like, what is going on? And so how do you, you know, I think of like, you know, I was born in Florida. You know, you see these palm trees, they bend during a hurricane, they don't break, right? How do you withstand the hurricane of all this illegal recruiting and wild lies that go on? Well, you have a good foundation, you know, and you're not going to be able to keep everybody. And at some point it's going to not go your way. But if you buy into the people and the product and you believe in it, then they believe in it and they don't want to leave, you know.
Well, do you have to address that, you know, a little bit? You just brought about, you know, pocket watching. I mean, does Coach Pittman have to drink kind of, we go over it one time and that's it and we're done with it? Or do you just kind of fill the room? Or, I mean, which is just weird.
I think it's first off, I think Coach Pitt handles all of that really well. Yeah. And he's the number one advocate for our players to get what they deserve. I mean, there's no one in our building that wants more for our guys than him. I mean, there's times where he has days, I'm sure, where he doesn't even get to work on football because he's working on all this other stuff all day long. And so I know there's not a bigger advocate for the players than him. For us, like our job as assistants is to manage the room as much as we can. So he doesn't have to have those, you know, 100 conversations at the end of spring ball with all these players, you know. And it doesn't mean that players don't need to have, it doesn't mean he doesn't want to have meetings with the players. But like I view my job as assistant is my job is to handle the offensive line.
Yeah.
And I need to solve all the problems that I could possibly solve and handle as much of it as I can before it ever gets to him. Mm-hmm. Because if I got 10 guys going into him with problems, that's a clear indicator to him that I'm not connected with my room, you know? And so I need to be so connected with my room day to day that, hey, I know what's going on. And I know if I got a player that's disgruntled, or if I know I got a player that misses home, or I know I got a player that had their uncle pass away. I mean, that's just being connected to your room. And I think that's our job as assistants.
It's so interesting how the game has just changed in the last, since you've been a full-time coach.
Super fast.
And it's crazy.
Well, I figured this all out. Bray is just loves NIL, but he's really pissed because he didn't get any when NIL wasn't around when he was around.
I don't know, man. If Bray came in and said, hey, coach, I need this or I'm leaving, we probably would have let him walk.
Yeah. See you later.
Probably would have let him walk. Say, well, good luck to you, buddy.
A hard negotiator right there.
Could you imagine Bray in the age of NIL?
No.
It was meant to be after my time.
Yeah. Yeah, you were saved.
Yeah, well, he had had people working for him. You know,
oh, there's no question. I mean, yeah, he'd hire a staff. Yep. He'd hire his own staff to manage his. He'd have an assistant.
Yeah, that's true. Well, coach, before we get you off here, we appreciate you coming on. Is game plans this summer? You gonna get any? I know you just had the baby and all that deal. Are you gonna get a little time away?
First off, are we almost done? Is this not like the Rogan podcast where we go for three hours?
We go over all we want.
My plans this summer. Booked that you guys are gonna appreciate this strategic planning by me. So I knew that UFC 303. Was going to be on June 29th, which is my birthday.
Attaboy.
And I knew it was going to be on June 29th, and I just had a hunch that it was going to be McGregor. I just had a hunch. I know it's going to be McGregor. So I booked my flight, the hotel room. I booked it right the week before they announced the McGregor-Chandler fight for June 29th. So me and my dad and my brothers, we did it last summer for the UFC event last summer, and we're going to kind of keep it going. A little Vegas trip, go to see the UFC fight. So I'm going
to
do that.
Have you ever been to one that event that big before?
Yeah, last summer was my first. Okay. It was my first this past summer. But it was awesome. And I've been a fan since I was in college, you know, even really since high school. And so going to that was really cool. So now that we're all getting, you know, I got kids, my brother's got kids, we're all getting older. And so how do we force family fun, like we referred to earlier, you know, I've kind of took it upon myself. Hey boys, we're going to Vegas on this weekend. All right. Make sure that everybody's ready to go, take off work, whatever you got to do. And so we'll do that. And then me and my wife are still trying to figure out, hey, what do we want to do? Do we want to go on our own little trip? Do we want to go a trip with the kids? You know, she's like, well, we could fly to, you know, Florida, go to the beach. I say, I'm not flying Florida with two babies under 2 years old. I'm not doing it. So
taking your life in your own hands, everybody. Yeah.
But, you know, we're looking at, like, the lakes around here. Yeah. I mean, so many good places to hang out.
Got your boat cranked
up. Winterized today, actually.
That's what we're talking about. We're back.
Congrats. Back officially back. No wonder he's got the Fu Manchu.
Yeah,
the stash is back. The boat's ready.
That was a whole vibe today for you, I'm sure.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. What'd you listen to on your way to do it? Did you have something?
There's a Yacht Rock radio
station
on XM. Oh, it is powerful. That's 80s hits. Oh, a little slow tempo.
That's awesome.
That was good.
But there's a lot to do around here. That's the cool thing about Arkansas is, and I grew up in Kansas City, so I'm 3 hours from home. And so I'll be able to spend time with my family and you know, I'll find a body of water somewhere to float in, you know.
So you have to get Bray when he needs to take us out on the boat. I call it the yacht.
Yeah,
we need to go get out on the yacht a little bit.
That's the next evolution of the podcast. We're going to do some episodes out on the water.
Yeah.
We'll get you out.
So come on.
Yeah.
We'll get you on working.
No, I'm interested. I mean, and here's the deal. Like Coach Pitt talks about his house on the lake mm-hmm. all the time. So I'm waiting for the invite, you know. I'm hoping that he's going to be like, hey, you know, come by on 4th of July weekend or something. So, yeah, no, we'll find something to do. I mean, you got to take a vacation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you're a coach. And what sucks now is you got to recruit. You can't just totally not recruit for 4 weeks, but you also need the break to just like sleep in, even if sleeping in now is 8:30, you know, sleeping in and, you know, sitting, putting your feet up on the sand somewhere up on a dock. So going to have to find something to do. Because it's only going to get busier. I mean, like this weekend might be my last weekend off probably until UFC 303 because once you get into June, I call it June-tober because June sounds like a lovely month for everybody. But for us college coaches, it sucks. I mean, because you have camps, you're working with your own players, and then you have official visits now. Where you used to have those official visits in December and January, now they're all in June. So we got 4 straight weekends of official visits, which, I mean, that means no days off for 4 weeks straight. So it feels like the season feels like October. So I call it June-tober.
And that's so funny how that's all moved back. July, because usually June, about the end of June, I was setting up a trip with Lefty, our buddy, he's an offensive line coach also, and his boys coach at Texas State mm-hmm. and others at North Texas, just trying to set up a time. And everything was like early is in July when we could all get together. And I was going, mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense, but everything's moved back with those official visits.
Yeah, the dead period starts, I think, this year on June 24th. And so it usually starts like the last Monday in June is when the dead period starts in our calendar. And that's a blessing. I mean, the dead period they added in February was awesome. I'm glad they changed that rule. Yeah. Because at least it gives us a chance to really just focus on our own players.
Yeah.
Like our guys, you know, because used to be, you know, it's the recruiting is so crazy now. It's like, when do you actually develop those relationships? We're talking about how do you develop your tightness with your group? Well, if I'm recruiting 12 months of the year, it's just not happening, you know? And so those two dead periods, extended dead periods are good. And then I'm glad they passed a new rule. I don't know if you guys saw now, December is going to be dead this year. And so I think all that's good for coaches. Cause my buddies are like, I'm getting out of college, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's guys that are taking huge pay cuts to go coach in the NFL because they're tired of recruiting the recruiting calendar. And so I think those changes will be good so we can keep good coaches in college football.
Yeah, a lot of change. You know, you've seen head coaches jumping to coordinator's job just because, you know, they don't have to deal with all that stuff and that part of it.
Can you tell me what is the open time for what is the recruiting time for visits for next year's seniors? The first 4 weeks of June, right?
Yeah, well, that's kind of when we're doing most of our official visits. They could do an official visit right now. Like we could bring a guy, we could bring a high school junior, we could bring him on official visit tomorrow if we wanted to. Yeah, it's moved up. I think April, I want to say April 1st was the date that it opens. And so it's open for essentially 3 months for them to do official visits.
And then I wanted to ask a question about your after Christmas recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Are you are y'all pretty much done with your, I guess it'd be 2025 class in December?
Yeah.
So you're already looking at your juniors
mm-hmm.
starting when you come back from school.
January recruiting, really, you're working on the next.
Okay.
You're already working on the next class.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I'll be honest with you, I'm even starting to work on the next class right now. Like, you know, I'm going on the road next week and I'm going to go see some 2026 guys work out and watch them practice and watch them lift. And yeah, it goes fast and it happens earlier. The negative with all that is you miss the senior eval.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, it was a big deal to me when I was a GA. Like I created this spreadsheet with like 600 names And like my goal as a GA was there's not going to be a single player in the country that signed somewhere that if they get drafted, I didn't watch them. Because what happened was, I remember I was watching the draft, like maybe like 2012 or so, and there's like two or three like FCS G5 guys go O-line wise, like in the first couple of rounds. And I was like, that's crazy how that happens. And so, you know, I started tracking. So I started watching. So when I was a GA, I watched every single lineman in the country that had a scholarship offer from anywhere. And so I created this spreadsheet so I could then like, my goal was, hey, if this guy gets drafted, I'm going to go back and look at my notes and see what I said about him, whether I liked him or he's bad or, you know, he became a great player and I thought he sucked or whatever. But now you don't get to even do the senior eval piece, which is going to especially
for offensive line.
Offensive line, you know, and that's the biggest negative is you're making your decisions on guys off junior film, which some guys like, because every recruiting situation is totally different. Some guys you can just tell, no brainer, sophomore year, this guy's a dude. We want this guy. And then you have the other guys, you're like, well, I'm pretty sure, but I need to go see him in person before I pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have the other guys, which you're like, I got to work this guy out in person myself on my campus. And if I don't, then I can't offer him scholarship. And so you're missing that last piece now because these seniors going into their senior year, they don't want to come to camp this summer. They're doing their official visits.
Yeah.
So they don't want to come work out at camp. You can get the guys going into junior year to come work out at camp, but the guys going to senior year, they're taking their OVs. And like, you might be like, let's say you have, and I don't want to point out any schools, but like, let's say you have somebody from a lesser conference, maybe somebody that has offers from schools in a smaller conference, or maybe a conference that's maybe not as good as the SEC, and they have three official visits set up to three of those schools in the conference. And then you say, hey, but I would like you to play in the SEC. I need you to come to camp though and work out with me before I can offer you. Well, that kid's going to say, you know what, coach, I got offers. I got OV set up. I'm not coming to camp.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and then if I am good, then you'll want me out of the portal anyways.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just kind of like changed so dramatically from what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, because you got to keep those relationships because you might see those kids again.
Yeah, used to be like national unfollow day was national signing day was national unfollow day for me, which I enjoy immensely. It's like I'm breaking up with 500 women at once, right? And so, I used to love that, but now I'm like, I hesitate sometimes. Like, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't unfollow him because what if he goes in the portal in 3 months?
Yeah.
But I just ask for forgiveness now and say, hey, sorry, I thought you went somewhere else. Because I still am going to celebrate National Unfollow Day.
Oh, sure. That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, Coach, man, we appreciate you taking your time and coming on. It's always great to talk to you, and always we get offensive line. We can talk offensive line play. We'll sit here all day.
Yeah, people will unsubscribe.
Yeah, well, that's all right. the true guys out there, they know who we're
talking
about.
Yeah, all the BMI boys will tune in.
Exactly. Yes. Well, for Coach Jeff Williams, Coach Bray Cook, and the Mouth Brent Bender, we'll see you next time.